Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And it is May the 1st as we flip the calendar. And it's important for a couple of reasons, Rick. And obviously, we move to a new month, and that's lovely as always. But I think we're going to find out some stuff at some point today. The governor of New York is supposed to speak about the potential reopening of things and what the plan is with that. And Adam Silver said he's not going to address anything until we get to May. So it feels like we're starting to get to a point where we may gather a little bit of information, probably today and moving forward in the next couple of days.
Yeah, but I wouldn't hold my breath as far as the NBA is concerned, as far as, you know, the answers you're going to get. I mean, I think we're at the point now where the NBA, the NHL, I think Major League Baseball to a certain degree, you're trying to buy as much time as possible. I mean, you'll start to see definitive plans, definitive answers, the closer we get to a potential drop dead date for finishing up these seasons. Because right now, I mean, even the report now that the NBA has advised its teams not to have asymptomatic players tested because of, you know, how that would look with the current situation going on with now people, like regular people not being able to get tests.
Right.
So, I mean, we're still a ways away from seeing any of these sports.
Yeah, I think we're a ways away as well. Rick, Troy Vincent came out yesterday and said that the NFL is not going to take tests away from the general public. So, I mean, until we have widespread, reliable testing, then we're not going to see a return to sports. But today is one of those days, Dave, like you mentioned, where we're starting to look around the country and look to see whether or not it's safe to reopen. I mean, you're going to have states today rolling back stay-at-home ordinances and social distancing restrictions, and we're going to actually get to see, you know, whether or not we flatten the curve enough to where we're not overwhelming our medical infrastructure with new cases of COVID. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of anxiety out there for a lot of different reasons, because right now the focus is kind of shifted away from the carnage of the coronavirus to the economic impact, and people are feeling the urgency to get back to work.
Yeah, I think we're all desperate for that. I think we're all desperate for every one of these sports and for you know, things to open up. I mean, we talk about Jersey's going to start opening parks and stuff this weekend as like a trial run to see how people are able to act with that. But, you know, a lot of it also, Rick, is on the people. Like, you have to be smart about this thing. You have to be socially distant about this thing. You can't just, okay, well, I'm not affected. I don't know anybody that's been affected, so let's just go right back at it. I mean, you got to wear your mask and you got to be socially distant. And now it's on the people to be smart moving forward here.
Yeah, it's on the people. And I mean, with New Jersey and what some of these states are doing, I mean, it's going to be, you know, we're going to give you the opportunity to go out and be in parks, but it's going to be on you to continue to be responsible and do the right thing and wear the mask, the gloves, social distance and everything else. I mean, be completely honest with you, I don't know how much I trust that just from what I've seen in some of, you know, even going to the grocery store, whatever it is, you know, how some people approach it as opposed to other people. You know, I told you about, you know, the guy just hanging out, no mask, no gloves in the grocery store, kind of just like meandering around. The one guy takes his glove off and licks his finger trying to put, I mean, it's just.
Oh, God. Yeah, you didn't tell us that. A guy took his glove off and licked his finger to like. I told you that.
No, I told you that. We missed that one.
No, you didn't say that.
I told you that at Stop and Shop. Remember, I was sitting there and the guy was bagging and he couldn't get the bags undone. So he takes his glove off and licks his finger so he could get a grip on the plastic bag to pull it apart. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Glove off, finger in mouth.
Oh,
it was gross. Yeah. But it wasn't just one bag. So then next bag, finger in mouth. It was brutal. But the other thing though, it's what makes it difficult too. I mean, especially if they start talking about, you know, regular season, you know, finishing that up and everything else is, I mean, it's so different state to state. I mean, as far as, you know, how each state is affected, you know, the state, you know, that you could consider maybe moving your teams to, do they want to all of a sudden now run the risk of having, you know, COVID-19 spike in their area when they've been able to deal with it, you know, with a lot of success? And then for us here in New York, man, I mean, we're not at a point yet with our hospital situation and, you know, us being able to take care of people that eventually get sick or do get sick. We're not at that point yet.
No, we're not at that point yet, but I think that because of the economic impact, and there's an article on ESPN.com fresh off the presses where it's saying the suspension of the sports seasons has already cost an estimated $12 billion. When you start to see those types of numbers, people have more urgency about trying to figure out a way to get sports back and get things up and running, just because there are so many people that are impacted and there are so many people that are struggling financially right now. So it's, how do you weigh the risk of new cases of COVID, more people getting infected by the virus versus what's happening in, you know, the economic death, so to speak, that we're experiencing with our financial situation in this country. So I understand the give and take, but I guess I got to ask the question, you know, how can you prioritize the dollars and cents when it comes to trying to save lives? That's the part of it that just doesn't make sense to me. And there is no real recovery until we find a way to get past this virus and find a way to make sure that our medical infrastructure is not overwhelmed.
Yeah, you're really at the mercy of the virus. You know what, in reading this article this morning, one of the most, I mean, in the 12 billion, I mean, that just, you know, pops off your screen when you're reading this. You want to know, and tell me if you guys agree or disagree with this, the number that stood out to me that I think is incredible, and I would have never, ever, in my wildest dreams, imagined that it was this big. Outdoor recreation generated $427 billion in 2017.
Oh, my God.
Outdoor recreation. So you're talking about hunting, skiing, recreational golf, tennis, and fishing. $427 billion in 2017.
That's crazy. That's a fortune of money.
That is crazy. But now, I mean, we're sitting here going back and forth, and we're kind of in our own little bubble. Everyone's in their own little bubble. But we do sports talk radio. And sometimes you feel weird talking about how badly you want to see sports, just what's going on in the country. And then you start reading some of these numbers and how much money is actually spent on sports and how much money that sports provides to these people for earning livings. I mean, you're talking about,
sure,
you know, in the current situation, you're getting rid of $371 million in wages to people that are without jobs right now. That's ticket takers, beer vendors, you know, stadium employees, arena employees. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, you're helping to employ a lot of people, man, with sports.
Even with that, like you say, Rick, I mean, ticket takers, that's not going to be back for a while. Even when sports comes back, it doesn't sound like that'll be back. Beer vendors, that's not coming back for a while, right? I mean, ushers, that's not coming back for a while. Security, that's probably not coming back for a while because it's going to be pretty much, for the most part, unnecessary. So even if we take steps closer to sports, that avenue that you talk about with people being at the games, I mean, God knows how long we are away from that actually happening again.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to get Stefania Bell's take on when she thinks that that could potentially happen. But, I mean, you understand why the NHL and the NBA are looking ahead to the 2020-2021 season and thinking about delaying the start of that and pushing that back to December, because you give yourself more time to actually get fans in the stadiums, in the arenas. And I think that's where their focus is. I mean, certainly they'd like to finish the season that we're currently in, but it has to be about, okay, a recovery for our league. What does that look like, and how can we get fans back in these venues? Because there's a significant portion of revenue that's generated by having people come out to the ballparks.
Of course. And college football might be the most, I mean, of what you see. College football, I've seen, and who knows what numbers are accurate, but 30% is based on the revenue from tickets. 50% is based on that. I don't know what the actual
Dave, they
number
said Clemson, is. Clemson in ticket revenue alone last year, Clemson football, mm-hmm, $31 million.
I mean, that's a lot of money.
$31 million.
And for what is that for? Six games?
Yeah, six, seven games.
So we're talking about $5, $6 million every single time they have a home game?
Yep.
Try to guess in whichever one of you guesses. I know Chris already knows this because he read the article. I'm sure you
Well, how is that fair then?
Well, because I just
said, I don't understand.
I'll have you guess.
Try to guess, but guess. Chris already knows the answer.
I'll have you guess. How much do you think, as far as revenue from TV rights alone, each individual NFL regular season game is worth?
Each individual game for TV rights alone?
Yep, for TV rights alone.
Okay. So there's on average, 16 games a week?
150 million.
256 total games, Dave, if you wanted to know.
So, all right. So I'm going to say $10 million a game.
$24 million a game.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
$24 million, yeah. And then on top of that, to Chris's point about college football, the Power Five brings in $4 billion in revenue. So, yeah, I mean, what you're juggling now is not just how it affects this season, but the long-term ramifications.
Of course.
For all these sports, especially, I mean, the biggest of them being, like, how, if you, God forbid, have lost RE March Madness in the NCAA tournament, which generates a ton of money, and then now all of a sudden, the college football season, with how much money they bring in, you know, I mean, you're not just talking about the football programs and the basketball programs. You're talking about
athletic departments. Yeah, it trickles down to all the programs.
I mean, athletic departments, period.
Of course. I would be surprised, and again, we don't know. It's all conjecture. We really have no idea what or when or how it's going to return. I would be surprised if you don't see college football at all this season, and that includes the spring. I would be very surprised if we don't get to February, March, and at a minimum, college football starts then.
I think we'll see college football at some point, whether it happens in the fall or whether it happens, you know, opening up January, February. But, I mean, in terms of, you know, the priorities and what opening up really looks like, I think that you have to weigh the financial impact of it. And for pro sports, you know, when you have fans versus no fans, yeah, it's an economic hit, but it's something that they can deal with. I think when you look at college sports, the reality is that if you can't have fans going to the stadiums, then I think they really have to consider postponing the season until, the following year in that spring. You know, you're talking about not having it in the fall semester, having it in the spring semester. So I think that has to be a real consideration. That's something that has to be on the table just because you recognize how important the ticket revenue is to all of these college programs.
Yeah, but it's not only, you know, these people that love sports being concerned that they're going to go to one of these games and, you know, catch COVID-19. It's, do you have the disposable income where all of a sudden you can start spending money on going to games? Like, when does that happen again?
That's a secondary issue to it, right? Like, you have the obvious that you don't want to go and get sick, and you have to be confident that you're going to be able to bring your family to a game and be healthy. And then, on top of that, can you financially afford to bring a family of four, yourself, or whoever to a game? So it's two differing situations. Both have to be cleared.
Yeah, but I mean, this is what I'm telling you. Like, so yesterday before the show, I made a bunch of phone calls over the last couple of days. And it's like, these are how these phone calls end up going. Like, when you have, you know, the NHL having a conversation with the PA, whoever it is, or the NBA, I mean, they end up evolving into these kind of conversations where it's like, okay, here's this idea. Well, if we do this, then it's this, this, and this, and then we have to contact, you know, this state or that state, and, you know, we got players over here, and, you know, how is it going to affect, you know, financially if we have no, I mean, it's crazy, Dave. I mean, there really is. I mean, the amount of people involved, that you don't even realize that you need to put on these games. This is, I mean, as great as it would be a commissioner of any of these sports, I do not, I mean, at this moment,
yeah, these
I would,
are trying times.
I'm all set.
You're right. And John Heyman, MLB Network, reports that, and it's funny because today's May 1st, and you think early July feels like, well, it's so far away. I mean, to get things started, so Heyman reports that early July remains the target for the MLB to start the season. He said likely it'd be 3 weeks of additional spring training and then 2 weeks of guys who wanted to report early. So let's think about that now. That's 5 weeks, right, that they'd need to have guys start showing up. So 5 weeks prior to early July is what? May 20th? May 22nd? May 25th? So we're talking about three and a half weeks from now that we need to have a plan in place, know where it's going to take place, know what divisions all these teams are going to be in. Is it going to be the Biodome of Arizona? And you have to start getting the testing. What's that going to be like? God forbid, what happens if someone tests positive? And you have to figure out a way to start this in 3.5 or 4 weeks from right now. Doesn't that feel, Chris, like that's a very quick timetable? And that brings us to early July, which doesn't feel like it's all that close right now.
It does feel like it's a quick timetable, Dave. But when you see all these states around the country that are, you know, relaxing these social distancing policies, I mean, I think everybody's kind of turned the page and looking, you know, toward the future and reopening the country just because of the economic impact of this virus. I mean, it does feel like it's a little rushed, but you recognize how many people that are employed by the sports industry and how much revenue is not being generated because you have the season suspended. And people are looking at that reality and saying, listen, we need to do something about this. And we need to try to move toward gradually, you know, getting back to some semblance of a season. I listen, whether you think it's right or not, I think those are the real concerns that people have. I mean, you certainly want to protect the public health, but we also have to look at protecting, you know, people's job security and people's ability to be able to make a living because, you know, listen, bills are still coming, Dave. You still got to pay your power bill. You still got to pay your mortgage. You still got to pay your rent. So those are the things that people are dealing with on a daily basis, trying to figure out solutions to those problems. And without sports getting back started, there are going to be some that are going to be able to struggle, that are going to have to struggle as a result of that.
There's not going to be a perfect. I mean, there is
no, no.
So, I mean, there's going to be, you know, state to state, whenever they decide each state to kind of, you know, slowly get back to whatever normal is going to be. But, you know, I think the other big obstacle is, and I think this is the same for the players. I mean, here's the other thing to take into account. I mean, it's from what these leagues are being told, the recommendation to keep everyone as safe as humanly possible would to have these players actually away from their families, which right now for a lot of guys is a deal breaker. Like, especially in baseball, being away from your family for that many months is a deal breaker for these guys.
Yeah, and
that's
then you
been
have
the
to,
recommendation.
You have to wonder how many guys say, you know, it's just not worth it. You know, I mean, and how big of a guy is going to do that? Is Mike Trout going to say, you know what? I have plenty of money. I don't need to sit here and do some cockamamie in his mind baseball season. I'll just take the year off. Like, I just wonder, is that going to be something that happens as well? And Chris, I agree with you. I want sports back as badly as anybody else. And I understand the financial ramifications and I get it. You got to find the happy medium of what's safe and still works and brings it back. But there's so many hurdles that as we sit here discussing it, I bet you half the things don't even pop into our head of what all these different leagues are going to have to deal with.
Oh, Dave, I mean, there are a lot of logistical hurdles. All I'm saying is we're talking about, you know, the athletes and we're focusing on the coaches and team owners and the money that they're losing. I'm just saying with the people that are the vendors at the stadiums, at the arenas, you know, the people that are responsible for parking, all of those individuals, like there are people that feed their family off of the money that they make in doing those jobs. And those jobs don't return until we have a return of sports. And so for them, there is no happy medium. I mean, either they're going to be able to pay their bills or they can't. And right now they can't because we're not playing any games. I mean, you got the Attorney General of the state of New York saying that she wants cable companies to cut the fees from the sports networks because they're not having live team sports.
Right.
I mean, that's how serious it is. Now, we realize that that's probably not going to happen, but she's not saying that just for her own health. She's saying that because her constituency, the people that she represents, are feeling the pain from an economic standpoint of this pandemic. And she's trying to find them relief in whatever avenues that she can. I recognize that there are a lot of people that are out there hurting right now, Dave, because we don't have sports. And it's not just from an entertainment standpoint. It's actually from an economic standpoint, a financial standpoint. And that's the part of this where I think there is starting to become more and more urgency with these commissioners in terms of trying to find a way forward.
Yeah, the bigger issue, though, too, I mean, I know we don't have sports and all the people that, you know, sports employs. I mean, the bigger thing as a country is, you know, we don't have jobs. There's a lot of people that don't have jobs and, you know, how that's affecting them on a day-to-day basis. Like, at some point, I mean, the decision will have to be made. Like, the situation will get to a point where, you know, people will, I mean, the optics of it won't be great, but states will open up. The economy will try to get back and, you know, people will get sick and there will be people that die. I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, that's currently what we're facing until they come up with a vaccine or some kind of, you know, treatment to, you know, to make it safer. I mean, that's what's going to end up happening. I mean, you can say, you know, you have all these, you know, businesses that continue to run to keep us, you know, getting groceries and everything else. But at a certain point, I mean, it's going to be necessary for people, period, to work. Even
yep.
if it's not a, you know, essential businesses, it's going to be essential for those people. I mean, tell the people that don't have jobs right now that it's not essential that they get back to work.
Of course they need to work.
But there's, right now there's a delineation, right? The people that are able to work, if you can work from home and you know, and participate in the stay at home, the ordinance from your state, that's
right.
Fine. Otherwise, if you're an essential business. At a certain point, and I don't know when that time is, just like with the, you know, the leagues, there'll be a drop dead. Like at a certain point, it's going to be essential for everyone to get back to work because you just can't sustain having this many people out of work for this long of a period. Because now you're looking at, I mean, the economy just shuts down. And that, and then how does that affect the country?
I think we know how to fix it. I mean, it destroys the country if people can't work and can't pay rent. And, you know, I mean, it trickles all the way down. If I can't pay rent or mortgage, now the bank doesn't get the money, right? And then they can't pay, and landlords don't have money to pay out, you know, doormen. And I mean, it trickles down a million different ways. So it's, the whole thing is scary. It really is. And it's uncharted territory that we're in right now.
Yeah, it's scary, Dave. It's scary, Dave, and I don't think anybody has all the answers to it, but, you know, I was reading something where they were talking about Adam Silver and how he's the guy for the NBA. He's going to be responsible for making the call. In situations of crisis, this is not something where you can come up with a solution with the consensus. This is something where the person that's in charge has to make a decision, and everybody has to live with that decision. Yeah. And I feel like that's where we are with pro sports right now. These commissioners have to make a tough call. And, you know, there are going to be people on both sides of the issue that probably are going to disagree with it. But you got to make the decision and you got to move forward. Otherwise, we're not going to get back started.
And of all the commissioners that I trust, he's probably number one on my list. Like, I feel like if there's one guy, and we don't know what's going to happen, but if there's one guy that I buy in is going to do the right thing or do something that I look at as the right thing, I believe in Adam Silver the most.
Well, he's been the most proactive, and he seems to have the best relationship with his players. So, I mean, it seems like they've always been ahead of whatever it might be and made, for the most part, the right decisions. I mean, what it's going to come down to, Dave, in the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, just the country in general, is the states, they can only protect you for so long, right? Like, right now they're trying to protect you, making you stay in the house. At some point, it's going to be on you. Like, the states will start to ease up, and you'll now be responsible for your own health.
But that's terrifying, because you've seen some of these people that are willing to just do whatever they want to do.
Well, I understand it, but if you're going to be socially responsible, then that they're going to rely. These states will rely now. We can't protect you anymore because it financially doesn't make sense. We can't do it. We have to open up businesses. So now we're going to rely on you. If you do the right things, you socially distance, you know, hopefully you'll avoid it. But if you're one of these people that, you know, thinks it's just the flu and you want to walk around with no mask and not socially distanced, then we can't help you.
I guess the scariest part of that, Rick, is if you have another spike in the coronavirus, what then happens? Like, do we have to shut everything down again? Do we have to go through what we've gone through for the last 40 days again? Like, that's the part that really worries me. You know, we don't have any answers to that. You know, Dr. Fauci is saying it's not a matter of if, but when the coronavirus has a resurgence later on this fall. Like, those are things that worry me when we start talking about trying to get things back open because of the economy. You're going to put more people at risk. Again, guys, I don't have any answers. I'm just going off the information that I'm seeing on the news like everybody else. But, I mean, this is one of those things where it doesn't feel like there are any good answers in terms of dealing with the problems that we're facing as a result of this pandemic. I mean, I just saw a report that the gross domestic product in the first quarter in this country is down 5%, the largest contraction since the Great Recession back in 2008. And they're saying that it's going to get even worse in the second quarter. That's scary, Dave, when you think about that.
It's terrifying. And look at the amount of unemployment going on in this country right now.
All 30 we'll million people, Dave. 30 million people for filing for unemployment.
And that's going to increase, you know, tenfold every single week. All right, here's what we have on our show today. Bill Barnwell is going to join us at 11 o'clock. Alan Houston at 11:30. And Stefania Bell at 12:15. So really the unprecedented triple guest for us here. We never have three guests during a show. After us, of course, Bart and Han. And Damian Woody at 1:30 and PJ Carlissimo at 2 o'clock. And then the K Show starts, of course, at 2:55. Scott Boris is going to join them at 5 o'clock. And then Chris Carlin. I mean, this man, he's like the magician. He pulls guests out of his hat all the time. Jeff McNeil will join Carlin at some point during his show tonight as well. So that's quite the guest list today.
Yeah, it's a big hat. I mean, have you seen the size of his head? It's humongous.
You can't help yourself, can you?
No,
you
I can't. It's
how come nobody can get a Mets guest and Carlin's got Mets guests all over the place?
I have no idea. Oh, he did work. I mean, okay. I mean, connect the dots. I mean,
right, because he worked at SNY, so he's got that connection. But you and I are probably the two biggest Mets fans on the station. We can't get a Mets guest?
I'm very special.
maybe that's my fault. I mean, last time we had Harvey, he got in trouble, so maybe it's my fault. I'll take blame for it. But.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think trouble's at, like, do you think a place is going to call Jeff McNeil and say, you shouldn't be doing a hit on 98.7? We have a pandemic going on. People can't eat food. No, they're not going to do that.
Dave, you think the local sports teams are above doing that?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
We're like the Statue of Liberty with the Mets now. Come on. Come on. We're wide open to you. Join us.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I mean, you got guys, a bunch of guys just sitting at home doing nothing. I mean, this would be the time to just keep yourself relevant. You know, have your players
and
on.
Like Pete Alonso starting to do charity. We have him on, talk about the charity. Same with Steven Matz. It's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, they're grown men. You don't trust them to go on the radio and say the right things? Come on.
Join me.
You should trust them enough that they're not going to come on the radio and say anything crazy.
No, of course. It'd be good for the team. It'd be good for them individually. It'd be good for the station. It's a win-win all around.
Or maybe we have Brett Favre call them, and then he can report back what they said.
Yes. That'd be beautiful. There's everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. What are they? Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your call for your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. Rick, I'm a little disappointed in you from yesterday.
Well, what did I do yesterday?
Well, because you gave us this whole buildup about how there's a movie that you watched and it was so awful.
Oh, yeah.
And
it was awful.
You never told us what it was.
Well, because I was going to buy, I mean, it was meant for observations, but then we got into the conversation with the calls and everything else, so it was a shorter observations, and I didn't have enough time. It was you want to know?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we finished doing the show, and I start getting tweets yelling at me that you didn't tell people what movie was so awful that they should never watch it.
And I was actually surprised. I wasn't
unfair. Like, why would I get yelled at because you don't tell the story that you have in the?
Well,
because
you drive the show. I mean, you're like the thought caddy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I tell you before the show if I get some ideas.
I like that term, the thought caddy. I like
Yeah,
that.
You're the thought caddy. And then you just tee me up, and then I hit it.
Yeah, but I'm going to need for you to tell me what movie that was terrible so I don't waste my time watching it.
It was, I'm telling you right now, I wasn't even mad that I rented it.
Rented it?
I had to rent it, yeah. I rented it. What am I supposed to do? I was disappointed and by the end of it, disgusted.
That you paid your money for it.
Exactly. And yeah. These two people that I respect and enjoy would actually make the movie, screen it, and then release it. Because you know, I mean, they're too smart to watch this and go, you know what, this is
good.
So
who's starring in this movie?
Will Ferrell is in the movie.
Will Ferrell.
Who I love.
Well, everybody loves him.
Yeah, and then when you see the trailer, you're like, oh, this is going to be hilarious. It's the movie Downhill.
I'm not even familiar with that movie.
It's Will Ferrell.
Oh, is that with Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
Yes, who I love. And she's hilarious in Veep. And when you watch the trailer, it's the, you know, they're sitting outside having lunch, and all of a sudden there's an avalanche.
Right.
And then, you know, she protects the kids, and he grabs his cell phone and runs off.
Okay.
Which is funny. Like, the premise of it's supposed to be funny. It wasn't funny. It wasn't funny at all.
So maybe Will Ferrell's movie wasn't funny, but him dressing up like Greg Olsen to talk to the Seahawks, that's hilarious.
See, that's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
I have high expectations for Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Even the show I just watched, Dead to Me, which is produced by Will Ferrell, really good. This movie, trash.
So this movie comedy or dramatic with the premise of comedy? Like, what is it here?
I thought it was supposed to be comedy. Like,
so it wasn't supposed to be a comedy. You had the impression it was going to be, and then you got involved.
No,
it was a serious movie.
It says drama comedy.
Uh-huh.
So I expected, okay, it could be surrounding something, you know, serious about their relationship. I mean, he runs away from his wife and kids and they could potentially die in an avalanche. So, I mean, I understand that there could be some, you know, some serious aspects about their relationship. But there should be some comedy mixed in. There was no comedy mixed in.
No.
It was not funny at all. It was horrendous.
Avalanche is terrifying for me.
So you didn't recommend this to any of your friends, right? Because I know that's one of your favorite pastimes, recommending bad movies to friends.
No, I'm not that bad a guy. I can't. I couldn't do it. No, this is
please,
too bad.
Please don't do that to me for future reference. Don't ever do that.
Yeah, that's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, I might have to pull a Don. I'll have to smack your face dead.
During the pandemic.
Of course, yes.
During the pandemic, you can't be that guy.
Okay.
No. People are on edge. You can't start giving them, you know.
Only good content recommendations only.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And good. I mean, if you're going to send a gift too to the kids, maybe send something nice. Don't send some Fugazi telescopes that are already broken. Don't do that.
Oh, stop it.
It's already broken. They're both broken.
How is it broken?
We had breakdowns. We had breakdowns last night. I'm dealing with the carnage that is these telescopes. They're plastic telescopes. It's sunny out. They can't see anything. So they start getting all antsy. And then before you know it, Milo's is broke and Ella's is broke. So now I'm gorilla gluing these things together this morning.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it wasn't a great idea.
It was a terrible idea.
I would agree with that. It was a terrible idea. But the thought was there. And that's where I think you lose sight of it.
No, I understand the thought was there, right? But I think what you need to understand is that when you're putting thought into this, you have to also realize, like, this isn't like you don't know how old my kids are. It's like when my dad decided to buy Milo metal golf clubs at 2 years old. Does he need metal golf clubs? What do you think that, no. Where do you think that metal driver is going to end up?
Yeah,
off my kneecap.
That's very unnecessary. All right, let's get to the calls. People lined up. They want to talk sports with us and the restart of leagues and sports getting up again. 800-919-3776. Let's go to John, Long Island. John, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Listen to the show every day.
Appreciate it, John. What's up, man?
I got a question. What do you think the future is for football? And mostly a question for Canty. When it comes back to it, who do you think the franchise of the New York Giants is going to be?
I'm a little confused as to the question. Who do you think the franchise will be?
The face of the franchise. My bad, guys.
Oh, the face of the franchise. I mean, I think moving forward is going to be Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
Like,
yeah,
that's who they want out front. And you actually have Joe Judge actually mentioning Daniel Jones by name now.
Which is a big step in the Giants.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. The way that the kid works in terms of being able to set the tone for the virtual offseason meetings and all of that stuff. He does all of the things that you would want your franchise quarterback to do. That probably is why Dave Gettleman went down the road and drafted him last year. It's because he reminded him of Eli Manning. So, I mean, if you get anywhere close to that type of production, you'll take it.
It seems,
I'll tell you what,
so
they have some good faces of the franchise. Like, if they actually ever do get good, it'd be easy to see people fall in love with this team. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be a good team this year, but Barkley's incredibly likable. Daniel Jones, incredibly likable. Sterling Shepard is incredibly likable. Evan Engram, like, they do have a lot of guys that people, if they ever did get good, which might be a long time off, are likable guys and easy to root for guys.
Yeah, and then I throw Leonard Williams in that mix, too. I mean, you Giants fans are going to love him. Love him.
Why? I don't understand why you do this.
Especially with that third round pick.
I'd rather you say, you know what, Dave, go watch Downhill. It's a great movie. It's 2 hours. You'll enjoy it. It'll be money well worth spending.
Well, you've watched
rather
it for the last.
This is
unnecessary. Haven't you watched it? You've watched that movie for the last 3 years with the Giants. They've been going downhill, Dave.
It's been awful.
Awful. Downhill.
You know, it's really not bad. Like you root for the Chiefs.
Hey, you know what's funny though? Hey, Kristen, this is why Dave is, maniacal to say the very least. Not one time, as we're breaking down the draft, we're going, you know, round by round, pick by pick, and he's waxing poetic about, you know, I heard so many good things about Andrew Thomas, getting Xavier McKinney. Never does he at one point mention that if they had kept the third round pick and not traded it to the Jets, they could have also got a center.
Yeah.
In the draft.
Diabolically, you know how I feel about that trade.
Yeah, but you just glanced over it. You didn't even mention it. Didn't even bring it up.
We talked about it for months.
We did talk about it for a long time, and you bring it up every chance you get, Rick. But, I mean, from Dave's perspective, you can't cry over spilled milk. You got to look at the glass half full.
That's expensive milk.
Or like Brody Van Wagenen says, fluid to the top.
It's like gold milk you got
there. That's expensive milk.
Let's go to Nick in Jersey. Nick, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Huge honor to be on the show. Love to see you guys every day.
Oh, appreciate the call. Nick, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, so really quick, this is kind of like a conversation we've been having here, is that I don't see a situation in which any sports come back this year. Because if you go back to like prior instances, such as like Spanish flu, everybody took to the streets after that first wave, and then it ended up killing more people the second wave than we lost in World War One. So I really don't see any situation that allows for sports to come back this year. Take a year off is going to be a tough call, but honestly, I think it's what we have to do. Thanks, guys.
Boy, I'm not even saying he's wrong, but I cannot envision a way that we do not get sports back in some way this year. I can't envision it. I don't see it.
We'll have sports back, but we're talking about live team sports. That's the biggest issue, right?
Well, listen, I mean, from a selfish standpoint, NASCAR, I'm sure there's a lot of people that enjoy it and like it and want to watch it. That's not sports for me. I need hockey, basketball, baseball, football. I need
but here's the thing.
Those sports back.
Dave, here's the thing, and I refuse, again, it doesn't cost you anything to be optimistic, and maybe it's I'm just being overly optimistic. I can't, at this moment on May 1st, I can't fathom not having sports for the rest of this. I mean, for, the point being this, is that at a certain point, and I don't know when that point is that these leagues, I mean, they need to explain to the players. And as long as we're at a point where, you know, we have available testing that's not taken away from the rest of the country being tested, which I would imagine is priority number one, they need to explain to the players. And for the most part, us as athletes, we're really kind of narrow-minded. We kind of focus on the moment as opposed to the bigger picture, right? Like we're always in that moment. Like, mm-hmm. How does this affect us now? They have to explain to the players how this affects them long term, mm-hmm. and explain to them the long term ramifications. Like, to explain to Mike Trout, listen, you may in the moment think, you know what, I'm all set, I've made plenty of money, I'll just go back to next season. Well, our actions now are going to have this kind of effect on next season. Like, they need to get that through the players' minds so they understand how important this decision ends up being in the long term health of their sport.
Yeah, that's the most important thing.
Well, because I can't imagine if you did a good enough job explaining to your athletes, like, hey, listen, this, by us not playing this season,
right?
This is how
you feel it generations down Major League Baseball. It's not just you don't get paid for this year. It means that, you know, free agency. But Mike Trout might not be a great guy, because Mike Trout's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars, though.
Yeah, but he's one of the guys that you need.
Mm-hmm.
You
know,
I mean, this goes back to Chris and I's point. Like, I mean, when we came into the league, it wasn't what the league could do for us. It's what we can do for the league. Like, you want to leave the league in a better place than when you got into it. Like, guys need to realize, like, selfish interests at this point, that you can't, it can't be a part of the conversation.
But isn't that the true mark of greatness, though, Rick? When you have that kind of legacy, when you leave the game in better shape than you found it?
You don't think?
And we've been talking about Mike Trout being the best player in baseball for the better part of this decade. But he's playing in relative obscurity out there in Anaheim. I mean, this could be a part of his legacy if he galvanizes all of the players around Major League Baseball and tries to find a way forward with Rob Manfred in terms of being able to get the season underway. People are starving for live team sports, and it's in the middle of baseball season right now in terms of the calendar. So it makes sense that the best player in your sport try to be the guy that collectively gets everyone involved in terms of pulling the rope in the same direction and trying to figure out a solution as to how they can play this season.
Do you think it's by accident that all of a sudden LeBron James posts what he posts?
Not at all. Of course it's not.
Thank you. I mean, he realizes. I mean, he's smart enough. He's had conversations with his people, with Adam Silver, with the NBA, and understands what's at stake here moving forward and how next year and the year after that's going to be affected by this. I mean, these are really important decisions. And the other thing too is, and I'm not saying that everyone takes their cues from professional athletes. I think in this situation, when Rudy Gobert got sick and the NBA shut down, I think people kind of like, whoa. I mean, if the NBA shutting down, then the NHL follows suits and they shut down. Like, we better start taking this thing serious. I mean, what does it signal to the country if professional athletes in great shape with the best medical care being tested don't want to risk going back to work? What does that mean for everyone else that doesn't have those same luxuries that professional athletes have?
It's a bad optic.
Well, it's like, if they're not going to do it,
yeah,
if they don't think it's safe with this kind of, I mean, with the attention that they're getting from, you know, team doctors and everything else, what does that mean for me? Who doesn't have that availability and all that
you're
stuff?
Right. The only thing is they might not need to. Like, the professional athlete might have the luxury of saying, you know, if we don't play this year, I'm still fine, where the normal person can't take that same tact.
No, I understand what you're saying, and you're right, but I don't think at this point, right, that you can look at this if you're an athlete on an individual basis. Like, these leagues need to explain to the players.
I agree with that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. this is, you got to see the forest, you know, you got to see the forest past the trees. Like, this isn't just about now. This is about next year and the year after that, and the kind of the financial effect this is going to have on everybody.
And like you said, Rick, it's bigger than you. I think you have to start with that level of awareness on the athlete. It's bigger than you. And that's why LeBron James, after he said that statement that, you know, I don't want to play if there are no fans, he walked that back a little bit. And I think that's LeBron James recognizing how important it is for them to be out there, whether they have fans in the arenas or not. I mean, the NBA is talking about, you know, the idea of playing down there in Disney and what that would take, and will they be able to create a safe enough bubble where they could actually play all of the games that they need to play in order to finish out the regular season and have the playoffs. Like, I mean, they're trying to find solutions, and it feels like the NBA players are working with the NBA league office, with Adam Silver and the rest of the owners. With Major League Baseball, it just doesn't feel like that, but that whole tone could shift if Mike Trout took the stance of just trying to figure out a way to work with owners in order to get sports back.
I don't know that Mike Trout is that guy, though. I don't know that he's not, but I don't know that he is.
But, Dave, what I'm saying is he might not be viewed as that guy right now, but this is an opportunity for him to change that. Like, this is one of those things that, okay, this could be your lasting legacy. When the country was struggling, when we were in need, and we were talking about, you know, the mental health of everyone because you don't have any live team sports, you could be a part of bringing that back. We talked about it from the baseball standpoint as a whole, but from an individual standpoint, that's something that he could do, Dave. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very well-respected guy. That's for sure. I mean,
I guess
he's one of the faces of baseball, you'd have to say.
No, he is one of the faces of baseball, and Rick touched on it. He didn't want to go as far as to say the public takes their cues from athletes, but, I mean, that's the reality of where we're at in this country. I mean, LeBron James has more Twitter followers than the President of the United States. I mean, that's how big sports is. It's woven into the fabric of our culture. And so if an athlete comes out and says, this is what we want to do, and we're trying to find meaningful solutions in order to get to that end, then, yeah, everybody that's around the sport is going to try to support that and try to make it happen. With basketball, we know that's apparent. With football, we've already heard that. But baseball is... it's kind of in that gray area, and it just feels like there's this push and pull between the owners and the players, and it doesn't have to exist, and it shouldn't exist at a time like this.
Let's go to Chris in Mount Vernon. Chris, you're next up on 98.7.
Hello?
Chris. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. I was just saying, don't the athletes and the owners of these teams have a responsibility to the fans? And there are fans that are dying. The U.S. death toll yesterday was over 2,000. How do you talk about returning back to the field or to the court when you have over 2,000 people dying, 2,000 citizens dying? How does that resonate with people? I mean, at the end of the day, sports is really important, but life is more important, and we in this country need to have a little more discipline. Sports, no sports for a year. Okay, fine. We will go.
Yeah,
on.
But it's not. But time out. It's not just sports. I mean, I get people's health and well-being is the priority, but I mean, people getting back to work, earning a living, the economy is. I mean, that's also a priority.
I understand that, but if your health and well-being is the priority, then let it be the priority. Other countries will reopen, like in the case the other caller said with the Spanish flu, they reopened, fine, there was a problem. Why are we taking these chances with our lives?
We haven't taken any chances, Chris.
Chris, we're not saying...
We're slowly reopening our country, and you're going to see the effects of that. I mean...
Yeah, but you have to, but Chris, at a certain point, you need to reopen the country. And the reality is that people will continue to die. I mean, it's terrible to say that, but that is the reality. The country needs to go back to work.
The country does need to go back to work. I mean, I've worked through the whole thing, so I've seen what it's doing. But at some point,
okay, so but you working through the whole thing and me working through the whole thing and Chris and Dave working through the whole thing, we have a different perspective than a person that's been laid off and can't afford to pay their bills. Ask that person if they're willing to go out and risk working and catching COVID-19. I'm sure they would. I mean, they'd think about it.
Right, but we also have a perspective and seeing what is happening out there also.
No, but I think you've lost perspective. The leagues, hey, Chris, time out 1 second. I think you've kind of lost perspective. The leagues aren't talking about all of a sudden now it's just going to be, you know, let's open up willy-nilly and open up these stadiums and have 50,000 people at the games. The only reason that they're even considering opening up is if they feel like they can do it in a safe manner and at least provide people that are stuck at home some escape from the day-to-day. Provide some kind of service if they can do it safe.
But, Chris, it's got
to
be safe.
They're not trying to jeopardize the lives of people.
None of us are saying that you just go out there and if 10,000 people die because you bring baseball and basketball back, well, that's the breaks. No, it's got to be a safe way that they bring these sports back. And if it can't be, and if it's not, then they shouldn't bring them back.
Yes, but it seems like the narrative is being pushed that this has to happen. It does not have to happen. We're seeing in
Brooklyn, no, but time out. But Chris,
Chris, hold on. We're seeing funeral homes being overcapacitated, and they can't deal with it. That's not a normal thing. People have died with this pandemic than in the Vietnam War. Oh, that is not a normal thing, and it's ongoing without a cure and without a vaccine. How do you risk people's lives to justify entertainment?
But you're not – I don't understand where you're coming up with the risk in the lives. None of the sports leagues have opened, and the only reason they're considering opening is because they feel like they can do it in a safe way where they're not jeopardizing people's lives.
Without risking lives. And we're sitting here telling you, thanks for the call, that if it means you're risking lives to play these sports, then you should not put them on.
But here's the other thing, though. I mean, the narrative is being created because the leagues understand to a certain degree that it is necessary. It is. If they can manage it, it is necessary for them to get back. I mean, this isn't the country clamoring, okay, we got to – like, the narrative is being created by the leagues. Like, the leagues want to find a way to get back.
Yes.
Because financially they have to.
But he's right, though. It's got to be safe.
No, listen, Chris has got a point. It has to be safe. And nobody's saying that we shouldn't put the proper precautions in place. But I think we have to look at the reality of this situation. Not everybody can afford to continue to shelter in place. I mean, Dave, I talked about it, man. There are people that are not working. There are people that have been laid off. There are people that have been furloughed. And if they don't get back to work soon, then what happens to them? You know, they got mortgage payments, they got rent payments, they got utility bills they got to pay, they got to be able to afford groceries. What happens when they run out of money? What does it look like then? Not to mention all of the tax revenue that's being lost and trying to pay for all of the services that our government provides. Like, I mean, there are a whole host of issues that come along with sheltering in place to try to flatten the curve. They're already talking about in Congress another stimulus package, Dave. The last one was over $2 trillion.
Yep. Yeah.
They're talking about another one in a couple of months.
To keep our heads above water, that's what's going to happen.
That's how bad it is. Well, that's why everybody has the urgency in terms of getting the economy back going and getting sports back and getting businesses back open. I mean, at some point you have to say, listen, we've tried to do our best to flatten the curve and buy time, but that's all these ordinances that were put in place were designed to do. To buy time, to try to find the protocols to get people back on the road to recovery from this respiratory illness. To try to find time to get a vaccine.
Yeah, exactly.
It was never designed to be the solution for the coronavirus.
No, we hope that the vaccine is going to happen sooner rather than later. And if it does, then you know, hopefully we'll get past this sooner rather than later. Just moments away from Bill Barnwell joining the show, followed by Alan Houston at 11:30 and Stefania Bell at 12:15. But Those maybe pale in comparison to Andy in Merrick, who calls every day at this time and has trivia for all of us. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, guys. You guys killed the football questions yesterday, so I'm going to give you a potpourri today, one for each of you, and one savage bonus question for all three of you.
All right, go ahead.
Chris, you got a football question.
All right, what we got, Andy?
All right, there are two players that have been inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame whose primary number was 85. Can you name them?
85?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see here. No, that wasn't his number. 85. Can I get a clue, Andy?
They're both defensive players.
Both defensive players, okay. Now we're talking. Let's see.
Dolphins, one of them, Andy?
That would be one of them.
Yeah. A Renaissance man, one would say.
Yes, you would.
Yeah. Inside the NFL?
75. You said inside the NFL.
Maybe I said that, yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Inside the NFL, dog. Andy, you got me on this one.
The late, great Nick Bonaconte.
Okay.
And Jack Youngblood from the L.A. Rams.
The Rams, yes.
Famously played with a fractured ankle in the playoffs.
I don't know. I was thinking about the Rams, and somehow I couldn't work past Deacon Jones.
Dave, you're inevitably going to get some tweets that Art Monk wore 85 with the Eagles 1 year and Rayfield Wright wore 1 year with the Cowboys. But the question was primary uniform.
I love it, Andy. You're doing great. You answered
it. All right, Rick. Let's put you into the National. You ready?
I'm ready. Is ready after that Savage question. I don't know. I mean,
Savage.
You're setting us up. Savage.
The Tampa Bay Lightning have not been around all that long.
Yep.
They have retired two sweaters. Two of your contemporaries, guys that you've played against. Who are those two retired sweaters for the Tampa Bay Lightning?
I know them right off the bat.
I know this one. It's Vinny LeCavier and Marty St. Louis.
Yes!
Oh, bam.
Beautiful.
Oh, very nice. All right, David.
All right.
Here now, I know you did a stint in North Carolina, so you may get this one easily.
Yes,
Dave. Andy doesn't realize that I'm currently an NFL insider for the NFC South. I'm down to
yes. Little does he realize.
All right. So there are one retired number in the history of the Charlotte Hornets. Who is it?
Oh, my God. Oh, so the Hornets. It's not going to be Del Curry. Only one number is retired?
Yep.
I could see Michael Jordan retiring his own number because he owns the team.
Now here's a question. Here's a question for you. He's as good of a player as he was. Was he a great player, this guy?
No.
Bobby Phils.
You got it. Oh, yeah. Boy. You didn't,
it's ridiculous.
You
makes me
didn't
sick.
Take the bait.
Well, because they haven't had a lot of great talent down there.
No. They posthumously honored him after his car crash in around 2000, I think it was. All right, here's your Savage bonus question for
Savage.
All three of you.
Okay.
Across NBA arenas all over the United States, there is one arena on which a professional football jersey is hanging. Whose professional football jersey hangs in an NBA arena? The silence is killing me, guys.
Yeah, it's killing us.
Well,
too.
Andy, I mean, these aren't exactly easy questions.
I said this bonus question was savage.
Yeah, this is a brutal question.
Yeah, I don't know about this. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be much help.
Give us a little hint.
A little hint. This is a man who did a lot for his community.
Yeah, because that puts it over the top.
Never won a championship, but considered one of the greats of all time at his position.
Never won a championship.
In his community?
No, I have no idea. I'm going to need a bigger clue.
Is it Cleveland?
2005, the Miami Heat honored Dan Marino. His number 13 football jersey hangs from the rafters down in Miami.
That's a good clue. I'm going to go Dan Marino.
You got it.
Nice.
Stay healthy, guys.
All right. Appreciate it, Andy.
DiPietro, Catty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.